Yeah, I would say it was functionally physical, as you would expect it to be, right? Everyone finishing checks, everyone working hard to take the man when it's appropriate. But it wasn't nasty. It wasn't dirty. It was just everyone trying to do their job. And I think both teams recognize this is going to be a tight series. The power play on the other team is really quite good. We can't be taking penalties and putting our team at risk. And so, it was physical, but it didn't feel like there was too much animus developed between these two teams just yet. And I think you're right. I think the scrum, into the second period.
Yep.
That they took the two guys out of, and that's one way to diffuse it quickly, where you're like, listen, you guys want to fool around after every whistle, and I guess Tampa's been accused of doing quite a bit of this, of like creating scrums after whistles. They don't let it happen. You take one of each guy, and that slows that down in a hurry.
Mike, going into the game yesterday, I was talking about some of the depth guys for the Lightning, and really maybe they could be the difference against the depth guys of the Avalanche. Well, in game number one, move aside Alex Killorn and Andre Palat, it was the Valery Nichushkin and Andre Burakovsky show. As far as you're concerned, do you think the Avalanche have a chance at re-signing either one of those guys who are UFAs at the end of the year? And what has their impact been on the year? And do you think, what kind of contracts do you think you could see for them as free agents in the offseason?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. I think Burakovsky is going to be gone for sure. He scored at about 65, 68 point pace, which, when you could score 25 goals or so, which they both can, that's going to be a tidy contract. Nichushkin is hardly even a depth guy. I mean, he plays on the first line. He plays with MacKinnon and Landeskog. He plays a significant role. I thought Nichushkin was the best forward on Colorado in the game last night, better than his line mates, better than anyone else. He was that effective, and he's coming off a fantastic year while also being a tremendous defensive player. So Nichushkin will deserve, and he's not old. I think he's 27. So he's going to deserve a contract that's 5 years at $5 million. And Burakovsky will probably get maybe a little bit less because he does a lot of scoring, but maybe not so much of the defensive play. And I don't think that Colorado can afford either of those guys. You got Nazem Kadri to sort out. Lekkonen is a free agent. They have Nathan MacKinnon's extension kicking in as well. They need a goaltender next year. So they have a lot of things that they have to get done without a lot of money before they get to those pending UFAs that are both really good players and contributors. But I don't think, unless they take a discount, that they'd be back here. If they're going to sign one of the two, it would be Nichushkin over Burakovsky. I think Burakovsky for sure will be, applying his offensive game elsewhere next year.
Chatting with TSN's Mike Johnson here on Melnick in the Afternoon. Isn't Nichushkin such a great case study? He was a top 10 pick. He looked very promising as a rookie with Dallas after being drafted 10 overall in 2013. Mm-hmm. Got injured, had a down year, went to Russia, came back to Dallas, a couple years in Colorado. He's 27, as you mentioned. It's now that he's finally showing the potential payoff from when he was drafted at 10.
Yeah, I mean, that's a long, winding road, though. I mean, like, I'm all for being patient, and I'm all for development, but you're talking 7, 8, 9 years. That is stretching the limits of any team or organization's patience with anyone. So, going back to the KHL to reset, well, I think it was important for him just to remember who he was as a player and to rediscover kind of like the way he can play with the puck and not just be a defensive guy. Because remember, it kind of slowed down. Then when he came back to Dallas, he went through a year where he didn't score a goal. He scored 0 goals in his return to the NHL. And you're wondering, like, what is going on? This guy is way too good to be putting up numbers like this. But then he got to Colorado, found a role, a system, and some confidence. And he's a really good player because he's one of those players that, yes, you want him to score. You want everyone to score. But if Nichushkin scores 20 goals and 45 points in a season, he's still really good for you. He still will really help your team either as a support player in the top six or a third-line defensive specialist who's it's like supplemental offense. He's not one-dimensional, so I think he will be in demand by many teams this summer.
Mike, what really stood out, especially early in that game, was just the Avalanche speed going both ways, offensively and defensively. I mean, the forecheck was just ridiculous on the Lightning as well, and I haven't seen the Lightning look that slow. Maybe game one against the Rangers, where really the kid line kind of took over. But if you're the Lightning, you obviously learned some lessons there from both sides of the puck in terms of the neutral zone, slowing down the Avalanche coming at you and making sure you're able to get the puck out of your zone before that forecheck gets to you. How did the Lightning adjust for game two?
Well, I think you're right. And it's one thing to talk about a staff team and you see it on tape and you game plan, but it's another thing to feel it, right? Like, and a lot of the mistakes that Tampa made were forced errors by Colorado being in on the forecheck, active sticks, backtracking in the lanes, and Tampa maybe thought they would have had a fraction more time or another split second to make a better play. But this is where Tampa and their experience and their quality will shine. Like, they'll take that information, they'll process it, they'll find some different routes, you know, how to deal with the forecheck, where to move the puck. Do they try to bypass the winger? Do they try to go D to D to set the defense and doesn't pinch quite as often on the weak side as they do on the strong side? There are some things that you can do to try to negate that forecheck. It won't be easy because Colorado's really good at it. But Tampa, the coaching staff and players have proven themselves to be quite adept at, you know, problem solving mid-game, mid-series, and they're going to have to do it again. But I think they'll find some ways to do better. They won't completely shut it down, but they'll give themselves a better chance. And also the other part of it is the guy they rely on the most back there, Victor Hedman, had a very un-Hedman-like game. He had a couple turnovers, puck management, where he's almost usually perfect, a few more than normal. So that probably won't happen too many times either.
Okay, because you bring that up, what did you think happened exactly on the game winner in overtime? It's Hedman and Sergachev out there. They don't usually play together, and I just felt, Mike, that they were so backed up.
Right. Yeah, they lost their gap for sure. I mean, Hedman's first outlet pass to Steve Stamkos hit Stamkos in the skate and went flying back in the zone. And that kind of created this weird gap between the forwards of Tampa and the defense, where Sergachev and Hedman were now kind of standing at the top of the circle still, and they were getting pressure. And Sergachev then follows up Hedman's turnover by chopping it out to the middle of the ice by himself as well. And they're basically standing still at the top of the circle, and JT Compher skating in against them. Now, they weren't in that much trouble because Andre Palat was back. It was basically a 3-on-3, but because of the two quick turnovers, the structure was all gone. The communication wasn't clean. And Palat ends up chasing, you know, Compher the shooter over to Nichushkin the passer, and leaving that little seam play to Burakovsky, who was all by himself. And the defense couldn't help because they were just backing up because they had no gap. It was a broken play for sure, but a couple mistakes from guys who are usually pretty good with the puck at the wrong time, and it ended up back of the net at the end of the game.
What did you think of Nathan MacKinnon's game? Because John was talking about the depth players on both sides, really, in Colorado's third line, or whatever you want to call them, Burakovsky, Nichushkin, these guys are stepping up. MacKinnon, he looked very flashy at times, but do you think maybe game one, a matter of him trying to do a little bit too much at times?
Yeah, I mean, part of what makes him great, right, is that he believes and wants to be a difference maker, and he believes and wants to carry his team. He wants it so bad, and you could tell when we talked to him on media day, like, he was wired tight already and kind of focused and like just raring to go. And I thought in the first period, like, he was everything. Listen, he does everything fast anyways, but is it even faster than normal? Like, he was trying to make everything happen all at once and beat guys wide and take, you know, make the perfect pass and make a lot of shots. And it just seemed like, even by his standards, it was going very fast. And I think as the game wore on, he settled down. He got better. He got more efficient, making better decisions, cleaner with the puck, and played better. So I don't think it was his best game by any stretch. He was fine. His line was really quite dominant, but it just felt like he was almost over-hyped, over-amped up, which is understandable for any player, but especially him, who kind of rides that edge all the time. But I think game two, they've won one now. He didn't have to be the hero. He probably will settle in and be more his normal self going forward.
Mike, last one for you here. Based on everything we just said, you would have thought that last night was a 5-2 Avalanche victory. No, it mm-hmm. did go to overtime because the Tampa Bay Lightning just have no idea how to say die. What kind of a lesson do you think the Avalanche learned in taking on the two-time Cup champs and a team that you seemingly can never really put away, especially when you have Nikita Kucherov deking guys out of their shorts and sending the puck to Andre Palat like that?
Sweet was that. That was disgustingly nice. But I think, you know, I don't know if they need to be reminded, but that, you know, Tampa's not going to go away easy. They're not going to go in a series. They're not going to go in a game. They have great belief that they will figure it out. They'll find a way. And I think, you know, Colorado will tell you, yeah, the game was close on the scoreboard, but it wasn't close in actuality. We had more play, more shots, more chances, expected goals, you name it. We were quite a bit better. Tampa would tell you, we didn't play great, and we got to the overtime. Like, each team will spin it. Colorado will talk about the process, how they were lopsidedly better in that way. And Ted, we'll talk about the scoreboard, where it was a one-shot game where Pat Maroon almost scored the winner just before Burakovsky got it. So I think both teams are going to be resilient. It's going to go back and forth. There will be moments where each team looks good and not so good, which tells me we're in for six games or more.
I sure hope so. And I also just want to tell you, before we let you go, I really appreciated the fact that you defended the puck over glass penalty on Twitter yesterday.
Make a better play. Don't just shoot it over there. I'm with you. It's an easy play. Like, recognize when it's rolling. Don't force it under pressure. Yeah, it's a rule. Don't break it. I don't mind it at all.